voice kind. It was only then that Caledonia realized Red Tooth had followed them inside the tent and stood hovering behind Pisces' other shoulder, one protective hand supporting her elbow.
"Just her," Caledonia said. "Pisces, can you pay?"
was her next question.
"I don't do trade. Coin only."
"We can pay." Coin carried the least amount of value amongst her crew.
Their opportunities for trade were limited, and most places that used coin were in Eric's pocket.
But they kept a little for occasions such as this.
"Are you coherent?"
Doc Tricius asked Pisces.
"I am just wounded."
Doc Tricius nodded at Caledonia.
"Help her to the bed, and then you and your friend can wait outside."
She was already returning to her work table, uncapping a bottle of alcohol and smoothing the acrid liquid over her hands. "She needs antibios. Do you have them? We can pay extra," Caledonia said.
"I'll decide what she needs,"
Doc Tricius all but snapped. "Now, you and your friend, wait outside." Caledonia did as instructed, pushing a reluctant Red Tooth through the tent flap ahead of her. They found Amina outside, keeping watch over the slow shuffle of traffic, one hand ready on her gun. Nettle stood at her elbow, close but not touching, her eyes wide.
"You're the captain of your own ship?"
the girl said eagerly to Caledonia.
"I am."
Caledonia peered at the clouded sky, but it was impossible to gauge the progress of the sun. It had to be nearing midday by now. Splitting up wasn't ideal, but it had become necessary.
"Doc will tend to Pisces, but we need to keep moving. Red, you stay here, wait for Pi, and when she's done, you get back to the lifts and wait for us there. Clear?"
"Clear," Red answered.
"Amina, you're with me," Caledonia continued. "Nettle, we need to work fast. We need seaworthy food, gun tech, and Amina?"
"Batteries. Magnesium or air breathers would do. Solid-state lithiums if you know where to find them."
"Solid states aren't easy to come by,"
Nettle's smile morphed into a grin.
"But I might know a guy."
"Might?" Red Tooth stooped and pushed her nose against Nettle's. "You want me to help you be sure? I'm certain my friend already paid you to be sure."
Nettle took a purposeful step back.
"You paid me to be your guide. You want privileged introductions? That's a separate fee."
Before Red Tooth could advance on the girl again, Caledonia put a staying hand on her friend's shoulder. Though she was just as irritated, she had to admire the girl's gumption. It couldn't be easy to face three armed girls and demand more than she'd been offered. And if there was one thing Caledonia always admired, it was a girl with guts.
"Name your price," Caledonia said.
"I'll make the introductions. And, in exchange, you give me a spot on your ship with your crew."
"Off the table," Caledonia said immediately. "I'm not taking on more crew at the moment. Especially not crew too small to swing a blade."
Outrage blazed in Nettle's eyes at the insult, but she didn't rise to the bait. Forcing a casual smile, she folded her arms across her chest and stood her ground.
"I know some people who'll give you good trades for air breather batteries. I can take you there right now if you like."
This was a familiar game. Some other time, Caledonia might enjoy playing it, but now wasn't that time. She pulled another small pouch from inside her jacket and gave it a good shake so Nettle was sure to hear how much coin it contained.
"I'm not taking on more girls right now, but I like you. We need solid states.
Lead us true, and next time I dock in Cloudbreak, we'll talk."
Nettle's gaze never strayed to the pouch. She kept her focus on Caledonia, considering and unflinching. It was impressive.
"We'll talk about a spot on your crew,"
Nettle confirmed, and when Caledonia nodded, Nettle swiped the pouch of coin from Caledonia's grip.
Deal.
Shouldering their packs once more, Caledonia and Amina left Redtooth to wait for Pisces and followed Nettle back into the crowd. It was slower going with two of the large packs balanced on their shoulders, and more than once Caledonia envied Redtooth her immense strength, especially when she jostled from one side of the row to the other. In spite of the damp cold, sweat soon dripped from Caledonia's temples and down her back. The ground became steeper as Nettle directed them due south, where the paths turned into something more like roads, and the structures on either side gradually transformed from temporary stalls to buildings of wood and stone. Here, the people around them seemed less hectic, and more wore the glassy blue of the Sly King's banner. High on the hill above them sat the stronghold of Hesperus himself. Caledonia bristled at being so close to the seat of power, but if this was where the deal was to be made, she'd make it fast.
This is it!
Nettle jogged ahead, climbing a set of stairs and disappearing inside a stone building jutting out of the mountainside with four hewn columns caging it in. The door in the center gaped wide, the room beyond lit from within by flickering candles. They moved cautiously up the steps and through the door. The room was cavernous, lined with candles tucked into alcoves carved along the walls. Light danced over a large wooden desk, squatting before towers of crates and piles of canvas sacks, each tagged with pale yellow strips denoting their contents. Next to them, a stairway opened beside a lift, not unlike the one they'd used earlier this morning. The cold air smelled faintly of animal fat and smoke. There was no sign of Nettle. Before the girls could set their sacks down, a boy rushed into the room. At first glance, Caledonia thought she spotted a bandolier on his arms, but as he came closer, she realized they weren't lines, but scrolling designs like the one Nettle wore on her cheek and forehead, the scars the same soft ruddy brown as his skin. Silt didn't poison his blood. Darkly, Caledonia wondered what kind of bargain kept a boy like this out of Eric's clutches. Whatever it was surely the work of Sly King Hesperus. And it was surely nothing good. Yet another sign that this was no place for a girl like her to linger. They needed to make their trade and get out before anyone realized they were here. The boy stopped halfway to the desk and bobbed his head in greeting, breathing hard.
"Apologies for the wait," he said, though they'd barely stepped into the room when he arrived. "Nettle says you've brought goods for trade. We'll take the stairs. You can put your goods on the lift if you like."
"We'll hold on to them," Caledonia said, even as her muscles cried for reprieve. The scales were all they had for leverage, and she preferred to keep them close. The boy nodded, as though that were a common response, and gestured for them to follow as he trotted up the stairs. Amina stepped in front, shielding her captain from whatever might be lurking around the corner. The boy kept a steady pace as they climbed flight after flight of the curling stairs. They passed 14 platforms between flights, and with each one, the air grew cooler and thinner. Caledonia kept her pace behind Amina, but both girls breathed heavily. By the time the boys stopped, they were more than ready to let their sacks hit the floor.
"Captain Caledonia Styx,"
a voice boomed around them, and Caledonia's head snapped up to see a tall, broad-shouldered man with skin as black as the midnight ocean crossing the room toward them. His long, great coat was tied at the waist and billowed around his legs like storm clouds, and he was trailed by six or seven others. Just behind him, Nettle followed, expression contrite but also pleased. A girl of her word, Caledonia thought with a splash of humor. She was certainly that. Caledonia forced her breathing to calm as she straightened her back and squared her shoulders with this man. "And you are?"
"My apologies. I thought you'd been informed," the man said with a quick glance over his shoulder for Nettle. I am Hesperus Shreves, and this, he added with a sweep of his hand, is my court.
Chapter 14. Caledonia made herself a rock. Before her stood the most dangerous person in all of Cloudbreak, the one man she needed to avoid. This was a man who went to great lengths to appease Erica Hare in order to continue operating with authority, who would certainly turn over Caledonia and her crew if it meant securing his own interests. And now she stood in his court with only Amina at her side. The room was nearly a mirror of the one they'd entered on the ground floor. To one side was the lift, protected by a metal gate, and all along the walls were small candle-lit alcoves. Hesperus and his party had entered from a door opposite the stairway. He strode confidently across the stones to stand in the center of the room. The rest fanned out behind him. Four women and two men were now followed by four guards dressed in the short cerulean-banded black cape so prevalent throughout the market. While the guards placed themselves strategically around the room, the others stayed in Hesperus' wake. Nettle says you're the only one in this place capable of making the trade we need, Caledonia said, determined to proceed through her growing sense of dread. The bounty was on her ship, she reminded herself, not on her. And her ship was safe in the wharf beneath a layer of fog.
She knows her business. The smile Hesperus offered was as broad as his shoulders. Just as I know mine. What have you brought me?
Solar scales, all in good working order, ready to be repurposed into whatever device you need. As she spoke, Amina pulled open a single sack. The scales glittered darkly in the candlelight. A man hurried forward to inspect the scales. Amina stayed put, her eyes pinned to him. He worked quickly, selecting a few scales from the pile and turning them over. When he nodded, Hesperus continued.
And what are you looking for in exchange for such a treasure?
He asked, voice smooth. Caledonia ran down her list of goods. Protein, ammo, solid-state lithiums. Hesperus kept his expression neutral as she spoke, listening as casually as though she were discussing the currents and winds.
A hearty trade, he said finally, when she'd finished speaking. Shall we take refreshment while I have your scales tested?
They work, Amina protested, offense resonating in her tone.
Of course they do, my dear.
Hesperus shifted his gaze momentarily to Amina, who bristled at the epithet.
But I don't trade until I know what I'm getting. So, take my refreshment, or take your leave.
In spite of herself, Caledonia smiled. He was dangerous and not to be trusted. But he wasn't foolish, and he wasn't a brute. She could work with that. We only drink red wine, Caledonia said. Hesperus laughed loudly, his head tipping back to reveal all his teeth.
Kai! Red wine for my guests. Ladies, I'm afraid I'm going to ask you to climb a few more stairs, but I promise it will be well worth the effort. Please, follow me.
They traveled the curling stairs up two more flights to a circular room wrapped in cerulean blue curtains, which were pulled aside to reveal sky on all sides. This was the very top of the stronghold. In the center of the room, a fire blazed, and around the perimeter, four telescopes on adjustable tripods pointed in the cardinal directions. The clouds that had been so dense this morning were thinning, and from this vantage, they could see everything from the cliffs in the east to the beginning of sharper snow-capped mountains in the west. With a jolt,
Caledonia realized the wharf below was clearly visible. She caught Amina's eye, saw her own alarm reflected but not amplified. If this was a trap, then they were squarely inside it. Their only way through was forward. Two women preceded them into the room, both with skin as dark as Hesperus and armed with blades and guns. One took a seat along the lip of the wall, her back to the cloudy expanse outside, her eyes on Caledonia and Amina. Her head was shorn as smooth as Pisces, her eyes wide and elegantly shaped like Hime's. Though she slouched against a column, she couldn't hide the power of her lithe body. The other woman, Kai, went to a low table and filled three stone goblets with a ruby-red wine. Where the first woman was cool, Kai's presence was calming, surely meant to settle tensions before the work of trade began, or encourage Hesperus' guests to drink a little too much. "Always assume the actions of those around you are intentional," her mother had said. That was especially true of a man like Hesperus. He didn't rise to power by accident, and he certainly didn't keep it by being careless in his actions. Hesperus took a hearty swig from his goblet, proving the wine was safe. Caledonia helped herself to a sip. It was sweeter than she was prepared for, with a tang that left her blinking in surprise. "Cherry wine," Hesperus said, sounding satisfied. "The cherries grow in the mountains outside the city, but are far too fragile for a life of trade. One of the many benefits of living in Cloudbreak. But you're not often in my port, Caledonia Styx of the Moors Navis, or you'd know such things." Her ship. So he had seen it. He knew its name. Her pulse spiked, but she forced herself to take another sip of the wine before she answered. "I'm not often in any port," she spoke as casually as her tight throat would allow, "and I don't plan to be in this one very long." "That remains to be seen," he said, dropping all pretense of humor. "You don't fly under the Father's banner. Tell me, Captain, how you stay outside his grip."
"I'm not here to discuss my tactics with you, Lord Hesperus. No disrespect," she added lightly, though her pulse was pounding in her ears. "I'm here to trade, and then I'll be on my way." Behind Hesperus, the guard seated in the window shifted, her hand resting very near her blade.
"Trade is tactics, Captain. And before I engage, I like to know who I'm dealing with. It's not every day a young girl comes into my court seeking solid states."
"Trade is tactics." The words hung in Caledonia's minds as she considered her response and Hesperus' motives. It was possible he was exercising caution. Solid-state lithiums were rare. If she were caught with those in her possession, Eric would know where she'd found them. But surely the sly king of Cloudbreak wasn't concerned with what people did with their goods. He was stalling, searching for information that might be just as valuable as her solar scales. She needed to give him something.
"You know who I am, and I think you know more than you're saying."
"You are keen," his smile returned, predatory and pleased. "There is a bounty on you and your ship."
Caledonia's fingers became a vice on her wine goblet. The world was suddenly very small and very cold.
"Do you intend to claim that bounty?" she asked, hoping her voice didn't break.
The guard's hand settled firmly on the hilt of her blade. Hesperus leaned forward in his seat, resting his elbows on his knees and clasping his hands before him with thumbs crossed on top. A small tattoo nestled in the thin flesh between his thumb and forefinger, a simple design in faded black ink.
I'm in the business of keeping my port, my market, and my family safe. I do that by keeping the father happy whenever the opportunity lands at my feet. So yes, I intend to claim the bounty.
Caledonia's guts flattened. Would you consider another exchange? My solar scales for our freedom? Surely their worth comes close to the bounty.
If it were only numbers, that might be true. But they're not as valuable as the father's goodwill.
He shook his head.
I do like you, Caledonia Styx. And if not for the bounty, this might have gone another way. But I'm afraid I'll be keeping your solar scales in addition to claiming the bounty. Unless you have something else to offer.
Villain!
Amina cried. Her voice was followed by the snap of the guard's pistol leaving its holster, the bite of its hammer pulling back as a bullet moved into the chamber. Both Amina and the guard stopped. For the smallest second, Caledonia considered the bullet in her hold. It was possible Hesperus would consider the value of returning a deserter of Eric's army a worthy replacement for the bounty. But an uncomfortable twist in her stomach kept her from putting it on the table. She had nothing else of value to offer, and he knew it.
Think what you will. I have more to consider than your small woes.
Hesperus stood with the wine goblet held loosely in his grip. He crossed the room to stand with his back to them, eyes cast forward. The guard kept her gun pointed at Amina's eyes while Kai rose gracefully to her feet and spoke.
Keep your peace. We have no wish to spill your blood.
The wind is in the north. Are you so sure it would be ours that spilled?
Amina gripped the pistol strapped to her thigh, shoulders angled to cover her captain.
If not yours here, then that of your crew down there.
Though the words were very clearly a threat, Kai spoke with calm command.
Keep your peace.
Through it all, Caledonia kept her gaze on Hesperus. I have 48 girls down there on that ship. If you claim the bounty, you're killing every last one of them.
He spun. And if the father finds out I let you go, he'll make me watch my family die before he takes my life. I have no choice but to turn you over.
Of course you have a choice. You can fight. You have endless resources here. Surely if anyone can resist him, it's you.
She let the force of her words carry her forward. But Hesperus stopped her with a laugh.
My girl, how would you propose I take on a fleet like his?
One ship at a time.
Now the Sly King's laugh turned soft, pitying.
That is no kind of strategy. Better to choose the path that costs us the least.
Even if it costs the person next to you their lives?
Caledonia countered, feeling a surge of disgust for the man before her.
I should throw rocks at the mountain, is that it?
Hesperus countered, unmoved.
Better than hiding in one.
Insulting him was reckless, but in that moment, Caledonia didn't care.
Mino, he called to the guard. Bind our guests and take them to a cell while we welcome their crew to the Cloudbreak prisons. 48 will be a squeeze, but I doubt they'll be staying very long.
Brother!
Mino's voice was tense and soft. She lifted her hand, pointing beyond the window. The clouds that had crouched so steadily over the rock aisles all morning had lifted away completely. The seas were long before them, the breaker islands gleaming dully in the sunlight. And just beyond, perhaps 10 miles or so away, half a dozen bullet ships sailed directly for them. Their ghost funnels should have struck a note of panic. But for the first time in her entire life, Caledonia was glad to see them. Chapter 15.
Captain, Hesperus's voice was as hard as the mountains surrounding them. It seems your wait will be even shorter than I thought.
Brother, Mino's voice again, soft as a falling rain. She lifted her eye from the eastern telescope. It's a five sun.
Hesperus cursed, spinning to press his eye to the scope. Caledonia waited anxiously, her eyes pinned to the approaching ships, her heart thready in her chest.
The Bale Blossom.
Hesperus lifted his head to glare over the water. Without invitation, Caledonia moved between Hesperus and the scope to peer through the glass. Six ships of varying shapes and sizes cut toward the protected bay of Lower Cloudbreak. Five of the ships bore a single orange blossom on their hull. The nose of the sixth was covered in them. The blood drained from Caledonia's fingertips as she realized she was looking at the very ship that carried Lear. Time fell away like the petals of a dying flower. A cold kind of focus washed over Caledonia's mind as she surveyed the ships. Only four of them were small enough to make it through the breakers. The Bale Blossom and one other would be forced to stay behind. If the smaller four couldn't pin the Moors Navis down in port, they'd try to flush her out, crush her in the open. Before Hesperus could apprehend them, her crew would be locked in battle. The sharp edge of a blade slid along her neck, and a firm hand landed on her shoulder.
I would appreciate it if you came without a fight, Hesperus said in her ear.
I might. The thrill of finding the upper hand added heft to Caledonia's voice. But my crew certainly won't.
That isn't really my concern, he continued.
It should be. Caledonia kept her eyes on the bullet ships, on the shrinking distance between them and the port. My crew will tear your harbor apart trying to fight their way out. And you think those bullets care where their missiles land? There won't be a berth left intact in a few minutes. And when word gets around that bullets are bringing the fight to your shores? Seems like bad business to me. With a jerk, Hesperus spun her around. Frustration was apparent in the furrow of his brow, irritation in the clench of his jaw. He held her gaze for several long seconds before saying,
Speak plainly, Captain.
I'm offering you a deal. Caledonia lifted her chin above his knife. A chance to save your port. Behind Hesperus, Amina had been contained by Mino, hands held behind her back. Kai watched all four of them, expression flinty. To Caledonia's surprise, Hesperus didn't look angry. He looked alert, impatient, as though the shift in circumstances delighted him in a very distant way. Sheathing his knife, he asked,
What are your terms?
Caledonia pressed her eye to the scope, finding the ships much closer than she'd anticipated. Her blood sang loudly in her ears. She was mere miles from the man responsible for the death of her family. Her skin flushed, and she felt light as air, filled with the desire to fight. But even as her body vibrated with the urge to charge directly for the Bale Blossom, she could see the field was stacked against her. Engaging them here would mean the death of most, if not all, her crew. Even if they made it past the Breaker Isles, she'd never get close to Lear. She preferred a fight she could win, or one that got her close enough to see his face. If she took her crew into this battle, she was betraying them on every level. Lord Hesperus, are the Rock Isle canals passable? Caledonia turned again to face him.
Passable, yes, but it takes a nimble ship, a narrow one, and yours, as I understand it, isn't.
I'll worry about my ship. Do you have charts? When he nodded, she continued. Then here is the deal. You get me and my crew back to my ship with charts in hand, and we'll take the fight out of your port. Now Hesperus hesitated. It would be difficult to deny he'd done more than fail to hold them if he handed over charts of the Rock Isle canals. But a battle inside the Breaker Islands would be decidedly worse.
It had taken decades for Cloudbreak to build its reputation as a safe port, but it would take only minutes to destroy it. Kai pressed her hand to Hesperus' arm and revealed a small tattoo nestled in the flesh between her thumb and forefinger. If Caledonia had to guess, she'd say it was a match for the one on Hesperus' own hand and that Mino had one as well. He wasn't lying when he said he was in the business of protecting his family. Hesperus bared his teeth at his sister.
Yes, damn it. I'll give them to you, but you must go. Fast.
I have crew in town. I won't leave them. Caledonia knew she was pushing the limits of Hesperus' goodwill, but she sensed that they could be pushed just a bit further. He might not be an enemy of Eric, but he wasn't a friend either.
Mino.
Kai turned to her sister.
Where?
Mino asked, releasing Amina.
At the lifts, Amina said. Two girls.
That's it? Mino asked, and when both Amina and Caledonia nodded, she vanished down the stairs.
She'll find them and get them on the lifts, but you must follow me, Kai said,
hurrying them down a single flight of stairs. Instead of continuing down the endless stairs they'd climbed to reach the observatory, she took an immediate turn, leading them through a corridor they'd passed on their way up. Hesperus followed at first, but soon broke away, hollering to Kai to hold them until he returned. The hallway was broad enough to walk two abreast until Kai turned sharply, and they passed through a wooden doorway into a narrow tunnel. The air was even colder here and smelled more richly of earth and rock. Instead of descending the side of the mountain, they were cutting through it. Panic pressed against the focus of Caledonia's mind, eating away at her thoughts until for a moment, all she could think of was Pisces, her sister, the person who kept her heart from turning to stone. She would not leave her behind again. Kai came to a stop before a latticed metal door and pushed it aside to reveal another lift. This one was crafted of metal, with railings wrapped around each side. It looked decidedly sturdier than the horror they'd ridden this morning.
Get in. It will take you directly to the docks.
Kai opened a panel on the wall and began flipping levers. Lights flared muddy green and burnt orange. Distantly, Caledonia wondered if Clag operated controls like these.
I can't go without Pisces and Red.
Caledonia knew she wasn't thinking clearly, that she was prioritizing her heart over her crew. Amina knew it too. She stepped in front of her captain, pinning her with an uncompromising expression.
On the lift, Captain.
Her hands came down on Caledonia's shoulders, and she applied firm pressure, but did not shove.
Or I'll put you there myself.
Moving in closer, she lowered her voice.
Staying here only puts your crew at more risk. You need to trust Pisces and Red to move quickly and get to the ship. And you need to have everything ready when they get there. That's what we trust you to do.
She was right. Of course she was right. But Caledonia's feet felt leaden as she boarded the lift. The sound of footsteps rang through the tunnel. For the briefest second, Caledonia hoped it might be her girls returning with Mino. But it was only one set of footsteps, not three. Hesperus. He returned with a metal cylinder clutched in his hand. Sweat gleamed on his brow. He didn't offer the cylinder immediately, but held it across his body like a weapon.
No map of the canals is completely true.
All his earlier resistance was gone. This was a different Hesperus, earnest and concerned. It was a Hesperus Caledonia instinctively trusted.
Each contains a purposeful flaw. A mistake meant to mislead those unfamiliar with the channels. It's one of the things that keeps them impassable. On this one, it's the northern corridors. Their depth, width, length, everything is off. Sometimes by a few feet, sometimes by a lot more. Don't trust them. Find another way, and you'll be fine.
You said the flaw is one of the things that keeps them impassable.
Amina was far sharper than Caledonia in this moment.
What are the others?
Hesperus' smile was grim as he handed over the metal cylinder.
Most of the rock isles are unstable. They fracture and cave daily. No map can help you with that.
There's no more time,
Kai urged. She slid the cage shut between them. You must go, now. The lift gave a small hiccup and began to move down. Thank you, Lord Hesperus, Caledonia said, tipping her head to maintain eye contact. I won't forget this.
Don't hurt my port, Captain Styx, Hesperus called just before they moved out of earshot. I hope you survive.
The lift slid downward, picking up speed as it descended the shaft of rock. A damp wind rushed upward, bringing the familiar scents of brine and chalky sands. Though Hesperus' stronghold was higher than the market level of Cloudbreak, the trip down seemed to take half as long as the trip up. The lift slowed before it came to a stop, and the girls pushed the lattice door. Caledonia wasted no time. They were across the small antechamber and through the blessedly unlocked door in seconds, only to find themselves standing on the beach, mere paces from the wharf they'd left this morning. In moments, the two girls were climbing aboard the Mors Navis. From this vantage, the bullet ships were not yet visible, and the crew had no reason to suspect anything was wrong until Caledonia sent up the cry. Make ready! Bullets on approach! Her crew sprang into action, readying the ship. Caledonia's eyes strayed to the cliffs. Three lifts moved downward. If her friends were not on one of them, then it was already too late.
Masts up! She shouted. Amina!
Knots to the rigging!
Amina's voice all but lifted her team up the four masts, now shooting from the deck to pierce the sky. Tin appeared at her side.
Orders, Captain.
Caledonia hurriedly uncapped the cylinder from Hesperus and poured its contents into her hand. A map, just as he'd promised, showing the canals in meticulous detail.
The canals?
Captain, no one sails the canals. Not in ships like this. We'll never make it, Tin protested.
We'll make it. We just need the right path.
Her eyes skated over the maze-like passages. If they picked the wrong way, they'd find themselves trapped.
Lace would have found a course, she said, with a strange and uncomfortable mix of irritation and loss.
If Tin had further protests on the subject, she bit them back and studied the map over Caledonia's shoulder.
Here, these canals look wide and deep enough.
Tin's fingers charted a path through the northern canals. If only it were true. Those dimensions are likely false, according to Hesperus. Look south of these canals. Caledonia selected the first channel she felt sure couldn't be considered northern. Anything south of that line should be reliable. Passing the map into Tin's hands so she could ready the bridge crew, Caledonia returned her attention to the lifts. One had paused midway down, one was already on the ground, and the third was somewhere between the two.
Amina! She cried.
As if reading her mind, Amina's answer came from high on the main mast.
It's not them! I can't see if they're on either of the other two!
Two ships threading the breakers!
The call came from the stern, where one of the knots was perched atop the sun sail with eyes trained on the approaching threat.
I see two more just beyond!
Frustration clawed up Caledonia's throat.
Engines, get ready to shove off!
Hime was there in a flash, standing before her with panic pulling her mouth into a shape of distress. Her hands flew.
Red Tooth? Pisces? Where are they?
They're coming, Caledonia promised. They'll be here. The ship rumbled beneath her feet, echoing the growing fury in her heart.
They needed to move. She needed to give the order to move.
Captain, Amina's voice, they're on the beach.
Caledonia spun, spotting them right away. Red Tooth's blonde braids flew behind her as she ran, one hand fixed on Pisces' arm. Even at this distance, it was obvious Pisces struggled to keep her pace. Her long legs moved with a sluggish rhythm, and her head was tucked low with the effort.
Halfway through, Amina's knots called.
The crew stood at the ready, bodies tense. They could have been underway minutes ago, gaining a healthy lead on the bullet ships. Instead, they were still in port, floating there like easy pickings. But every girl on board looked toward the racing forms of Red Tooth and Pisces. If the two girls could have been drawn forward by the combined will of their crew, they'd have been on the ship 50 times over.
Shove off! Caledonia cried at last.
Her crew began the work of untethering the large ropes, keeping them steady in port. As up on the bridge, the girls ignited the thrusters. Pisces stumbled, and the ship seemed to hold its breath as she recovered her feet. They heard Red Tooth shouting, saw Pisces dig fists into the sand, and then they were up again, racing toward the departing ship. "Be ready, Tin!" Caledonia called. Slowly at first, and then, picking up small bits of speed, the ship moved out of berth toward open water, and the 200 yards that stood between them and the canal entry point. Red Tooth and Pisces hurtled down the wharf, Red Tooth pushing Pisces ahead of her. With one final burst of speed, the girls raced down the dock, leaping onto the deck just before it moved out of reach. Pisces landed on her hands and knees before collapsing against her good shoulder, while Red Tooth rolled the landing, coming to rest on her back. Caledonia waited just long enough to see them safe aboard before she shouted once more to Tin, and the ship sped toward the narrow opening of the Rock Isle canals. Chapter 16. Tin pushed the Moors Navis as fast as the shallow waters would allow. Their wake rolled behind them, adding chop to the already dangerous waters between the breakers. It would slow the bullet ships down, but not stop them. "Amina!" Caledonia called as they raced along the walls of the cliffs toward the narrow mouth of the Rock Isle canals. "Masts down! High speeds!" Amina released a piercing whistle, and all her knots quickly disentangled themselves from the rigging. Caledonia spared a glance for Pisces, now seated with her back pressed to the mizzenmast block and under Hime's stern attentions, before darting up the companionway ladder toward the bridge. "Guns up, girls! Shields high!" Red Tooth shouted as two ships emerged from the breaker islands and the first shots exploded behind them. Tin stood at the helm, her grip as steely as her gaze. Behind her, the bridge crew monitored the rest of the ship's systems. Caledonia spotted the map, spread out on a table near the helm, each corner tucked beneath metal clips to keep it in place. They were fast approaching what appeared to be a solid cliff wall. Though the entry to the canals was clear on the map, it was impossible to see from this distance. On the map, it was narrow, barely wide enough to accommodate the full girth of the Moors Navis. If they'd been moving at a reasonable pace, they'd have plenty of time to plan the tight turn. As it was, they'd have to rely on Caledonia's sharp eyes and quick instincts. Taking the wheel from Tin, she felt more connected to her ship, its power vibrating up through her palms. It was reassuring and familiar. Still, Lace should have been at her side, counting down the distance in her steady way. Instead, it was Tin who was untested in the role. Caledonia couldn't yet trust her ability to gauge the distance. Water splashed along the rock wall as the Moors Navis sped past. 200 yards ahead, the splashing ceased and the water flowed smooth. "Ready on thrusters! Hard turn to starboard on my go!" Tin sent out the call. "Hard turn! Hard turn ahead! Strap in!" Caledonia gave Tin the wheel long enough to wind a strap around her own waist and snap it into place. "Do you see it?" Caledonia asked. "I think so." Tin's voice was tentative. "Counting down!" Caledonia called for the entire bridge crew. "3! The opening still wasn't entirely visible. "2! Wind whipped through the bridge. "1! She pulled the wheel sharply to starboard. "Port bow thrusters on full! Starboard stern thrusters on full!" The ship rotated, biting in and slewing across the top of the water at a steep angle. Caledonia gripped the wheel. The rock wall slid past, and just as the ship righted itself and regained forward momentum, the mouth of the canals revealed itself. "Ahead! Full! Thrusters out!" Her commands were executed immediately, and the ship charged straight into the narrow opening with only feet to spare on either side. On deck, Red Tooth called the girls to battle stations, focusing her gunners aft. Knowing they would be attacked from behind was a small advantage, but one they could use. From what Caledonia had seen of the bullet ships, they were smaller craft, which also meant
they'd be faster than the Mors Navis in these twisting canals. Tin's voice was strained as she called directions to the bridge crew, adapting to Caledonia's pace and the narrow canals. It was too fast, and they all knew it. Metal sliced against rock more than once, but never enough to harm the hull. The roar of engines billowed around them, the sounds growling off the tall walls as four bullet ships entered the canals in their wake. Caledonia pushed harder, her hands steady on the spokes, her muscles tense, her stance wide. She knew this ship better than anyone. Shouts rose on deck. The first bullet ship was near enough to engage, and they opened fire. Caledonia did her best to ignore the dull snap of shots hitting her hull. The canals curled tightly one direction, then the other. Each time they made a turn, they lost the bullet ships for a span of a few short seconds. But they needed more. "What's ahead, Tin?" she demanded. 300 yards to the first fork," Tin called from her post by the map. The ship dodged around another long bend, earning them a small moment of reprieve from the pursuing ships. But what lay ahead made Caledonia's lungs freeze. Before them, the canal walls tilted away from each other, bowing out like arms opening toward the sky. It left the waters within wide and welcoming. Perfect for several smaller ships to overtake a larger one. They had room for speed now, and they would need it. Caledonia ordered engines to full. The Mors Navis darted ahead, and for a brief second, it was only them and the water, the steady hum of their engines the only sound in the broad canal. Then it was over. Behind them, four bullet ships thundered around the bend and poured into the canal, sun sails glittering fiercely on their tails. They fanned out across the space, ready to attack the Mors Navis from every angle. They were smaller, lighter, faster. 300 long yards ahead, the canals narrowed and forked. They'd gone from a race to a fight. Turning the helm over to Tin, Caledonia rushed to the deck. Redtooth was already shouting orders, dismantling the shield wall from the aft deck and reconfiguring her crew for a fight on all sides. Amina's knots perched on top of the bridge, bodies low and guns trained on each of the approaching ships. It was exactly what they should all be doing, and as Caledonia studied the ships, now gaining on them, she knew it wouldn't be enough. Caledonia whistled, and Amina, Redtooth, Hime, and Pisces circled around her. "Options," she said. "Deploy the cable mines we collected from the barge." Pisces was barely on her feet and her arm was in a sling now, keeping her bad shoulder immobilized. Hime hovered at her side, one hand steadying Pisces' hip. "Risky," Redtooth said, fresh red clay painted in a wide swath across her mouth. Her eyes shone in this pre-light of battle. "Those things are designed for floating, not dragging. Could backfire on us." "Then we hold it as a last resort. Other options?" "Spin the ship," Amina spoke decisively. "We hit the thrusters hard and break their line before they have time to regroup. If we get behind them, we take the advantage." Caledonia played it through in her mind. The ability to spin the ship in a tight circle at top speeds was the benefit of their powerful thrusters and shallow hull. The maneuver would scatter the bullet ships and give the crew time to pick one or two of them off. But they'd still be left with two, and the advantage would be spent. "Possible? Other options?" she pressed. Lovely Hime raised her hands, hesitated. She squinted in the sun, her eyes straying to Amina before she resolved to speak. "We have quicklime in the hold." Now she turned to survey the four ships in pursuit and added, "And we have the wind." They'd taken the quicklime off of a previous barge and stashed it in the cargo hold, far from the desalination tanks and other sources of water. The caustic powder was useful for scouring pipes clean and dangerous when it came into contact with wet surfaces, like water or eyes or lungs. Caledonia had nearly forgotten it was in their inventory. "Vicious," Redtooth said, lips bending into a smile. "I like it." It was vicious,
and it was clear by the way Hime braided her fingers together and looked away that she wasn't proud of having made the suggestion.
"Do it," Caledonia ordered. Red Tooth gladly complied, calling orders to the crew. In moments, the quicklime was on the rear deck. Each of the girls handling the canvas sacks wore gloves and covered their mouths and noses with scarves or bandanas. Caledonia ordered everyone else upwind. Tin steered the ship into a slow fishtail, letting the stern of the ship sweep lazily from side to side. Thinking they'd gained some advantage, the bullet ships moved in close. They didn't see the smile that sliced across Red Tooth's mouth as she raised her blade. The bags were cut, and the air filled with a powdery white cloud. It puffed and swirled in the tugging wind, traveling toward each of the four ships. If the bullets knew what was coming, they had no time to react. The powder engulfed their ships like a deadly fog, filling their noses, mouths, eyes, and lungs with a burning they were powerless to combat. As the roar of their engines fell away, the canyon filled with the screams of boys and men. Their ships faltered and slowed, and soon the screams stopped altogether. The quicklime had burned its way through layers of delicate skin, making it painful for those bullets to draw a simple breath, much less issue a cry. Hime wilted, her eyes filling with glossy tears she fought to contain.
"I am like them," Hime said.
Caledonia considered her response. Hime had never felt like a bullet to her. She'd felt like a girl who'd been forced to adapt to a violent way of life or die. She'd felt like a survivor. Now she wondered at all the ways surviving could change a person, all the ways it might have changed her brother. And then she stopped wondering. "A little," she said carefully. "But that's one of the reasons we have to keep fighting. So maybe one day, no one will have to be even a little bit like them."
"Come on," Amina moved to take Hime's hand. She pulled the girl close, wrapping one arm around her shoulders. "You don't need to see this."
But Hime pulled away, keeping her eyes on the ships in their wake.
"No, I do."
Caledonia watched for any of the ships to recover and renew their chase, but they passed into the next narrow channel with no signs of immediate pursuit. The girls cried out in victory, their voices pounding along the canal walls. They were tired and hungry, but their eyes shone in the full light of the sun. Even knowing they'd left Cloudbreak without the supplies they needed, the crew was committed to this journey. It filled Caledonia with a twist of guilt and pride. It was only as Caledonia made her way again toward the bridge that she realized something shocking. The bounty was real. The boy had told the truth. Chapter 17. Dusk slipped down the canyon walls long before the sun had set. Caledonia's arms trembled with cold and effort. Every movement of the ship needed to be precise. Fast. When Amina finally climbed into the cabin to announce there'd been no sign of pursuit since releasing the quicklime, Caledonia pulled the ship out of gear. They might not have much of a lead, but they'd gained more by reducing their wake, traveling in silence, and letting these twisting, enigmatic canals cover their path.
"Go silent and dark. Thrusters for drift only," she said, giving the helm over to the bridge crew.
"Tin, take a rest too."
Everyone needed a rest, but more than that, they needed a safe course through these canals.
Caledonia and Amina spent hours tucked away in the map room, their lights as low as they could keep them, their backs bent over Hesperus' flawed map. Usually this was a task that would involve the whole command crew, but with Lace gone and Pisces injured, they needed Red Tooth on deck and Hime with the wounded while the two of them studied.
An ideal course took them through the northern passages, depositing them west of the Rock Isles. From there, it was a straight shot toward the Northwater conscription routes. But it was the northern canals they couldn't trust. More than once, Caledonia found herself tracing that course, wondering if they could risk the uncertainty. Eventually, they found a path that would take them safely out of the canals. It would drop them due south, west of the southernmost thrust of the Rock Isles, barely closer to their desired course than when they docked at Lower Cloudbreak. But it was an area that wasn't frequented by Eric's fleet, and that, at least, was a small victory. By the time the two girls returned to the main deck, night was thick, and several of the crew had taken up watch posts. The sky was a narrow slip of glittered black far above them. The sun pips remained dark, and the only sounds were the occasional whisper of pebbles tumbling into the water. It was the first still moment they'd had since fleeing Hesperus Observatory. "I lost everything." Caledonia kept her voice quiet. "Everything we had to trade, I lost." Amina stood silently at her side, offering neither comfort nor censure. She watched the captain with her steady dark eyes, witnessing but not judging. For some indefinable reason, it was a relief to be heard and not challenged or calmed. It was a relief to let her failure feel like a failure. "I shouldn't have taken all the scales with us. That was reckless. Rona never would have done something so irresponsible. She'd have taken half and held half back, just in case." "I agree." Amina's honesty was jolting. "But I didn't at the time. It was a good risk, just a bad outcome. I would have made the same decision." "Are you sparing my feelings, Amina?" Amusement narrowed Amina's eyes just as it widened her smile. "When have I ever spared you anything?" Amina was the only one among them who had purposely left her home and people to fight. The Hands of the River fought only as much as was necessary to keep Eric's influence out of the Braids. But at 15 turns, Amina, with her small family, had joined a band determined to do more than keep Eric at bay. She'd lost her family in much the same way Caledonia had, at the hands of a merciless bullet clip. She was like a hewn piece of granite, formed in fire and tougher for it. She would be the last to spare Caledonia any hard truth. "Are you sure there's nothing on this ship we can use to neutralize Electra's hull?" "I'm sure." Amina stood quietly for a moment, head tilted into the breeze as though listening to another conversation. "Captain, we made mistakes, but our reasons were good. Your reasons were good." It felt like an accusation. It didn't matter that her reasons had been good. The result was the same. She'd lost the only viable option they had of building the weapon they needed to save their brothers, and in the process, failed to acquire the food they'd need for a long haul at sea. She opened her mouth to say as much when a dreadful howl erupted from the bowels of the ship. It echoed around them, blossoming in the narrow canyon like a bomb. The bullet. Without another word between them, Caledonia and Amina raced below decks. The sound had called several curious crew members into the hallways, but the instant they heard the captain coming, they made room for her to pass. The two made quick progress through the galley and down to cargo hold on level 3. Here the cries were so much louder, splintered with shrieks of real pain. Even though he was a bullet, it was still difficult to bear witness to such agony. She made for the door but was arrested by a voice calling out. "Captain!" Pisces hurried into the cargo bay, face stricken with worry. "Captain, I'll take care of him!"
"I need him quiet." Caledonia paused with her hand resting on the hatch.
"I'll take care of him," she repeated.
Pisces looked more rested. Some of the color had returned to her cheeks,